Say, Mr. P, you mind if I grab another hiney?
Look, Norton, if you're going to hang out and guzzle my hineys, the least you could do is give me a hand here.
Welcome to episode 17 of Flickers from the Cave. I'm Mike.
I'm Marty.
Thanks for coming back and giving us another shot. We're going to be our new special edition episode withstanding. We are going to be diametrically opposed from our last episode, which were the two unbelievably thought-provoking time travel films. Time Crimes and Primer. We are on the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of thought-provoking, I think it's safe to say.
Yes, I would agree.
With Terror Vision from 1986 and Shock 'Em Dead from 1991.
Yes, neither of those time travel movies featured a former porno star.
They did not, and neither of them. The consistent thing that I noticed between the two movies we're going to talk about in this episode are the fact that there are frequent appearances of the logo of the band Wasp.
Is that right?
Did you take note of that?
No, I didn't.
Yes, one of the lead featured characters in Terror Vision had a Wasp T-shirt on, and there was a brief glimpse of a Wasp video on television during the course of the movie, and in the background, in some scene in the background of Shock 'Em Dead, the Wasp logo was featured prominently on a poster.
Wow. I did not notice.
Blackie Lawless got his royalty checks. I would imagine probably, 12, 15 bucks each.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of bread rolling around for either one of these movies. Typically, you and I have we've talked a bit about the movies we cover on the podcast before we sit down to record. But this is a unique sort of moment where we have not. We've not really said anything other than yes, we've watched them. And Shock 'Em Dead we had watched before, but
many
it's been
years
a long.
Ago.
Yeah, a long time ago.
It was essentially for me a new movie. I mean,
yes.
I remember scenes, but and the line.
Yes,
but
that's basically
what I remember.
Yeah, it wasn't what I remembered. I mean, there were things when I was like, oh yeah, I forgot he worked at a pizza place. But
yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. But so what do we want to start on Terror Vision?
Sure. I mean, we'll go if we typically go in. For whatever reason, just anal retentiveness, we go typically in chronological order as far as release date. So I guess that would be the way to go. Let's not break our trend.
Excellent. Well, I will start then with Terror Vision from 1986.
Hello, bloodsuckers. Ready to be turned to stone.
Will you look at those hooters?
Holy tomato.
Let's watch her tonight, okay, Grandpa? All the way to midnight.
Hell yeah, we'll watch her.
What about brain rot, Dad? The intellectual conspiracy?
I've said it before and I'll say it again. War stories and monster movies are educational. They're survival oriented. They always neutralize the enemy in the end.
This was a movie that we should say was recommended to us by one of our listeners.
Yes, Stuart. Stu-man.
Stu-man. He had written in to us and told us he enjoyed the show, which was nice to hear, and he threw this one up as one we might enjoy, and I will say that he was right. I enjoyed this a lot, and I really watched it expecting to not like it, but I was going to watch it because he had recommended it, and you know, I feel like if somebody's nice enough to write us a letter and say, hey, I like this movie, I feel like, you know, I owe it to him to at least give it a shot. And, you know, even going into it knowing that Mary Warnov was in it, and, you know, there's some names in it. And
Garrett Graham.
Garrett Graham, who is great in this and who is generally great in everything. I was really impressed with this, and it was bad, but it was intentionally bad, and it made sense, and it moved along, and it was intentionally funny. And it wasn't like I was laughing at it because it was so stupid. I mean, it knew what it was doing.
Yeah, I agree.
I really, really liked it.
I was the opening. I have to say, the opening five minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I was really not sure.
With the little fakey models of the planet and stuff?
Well, that, and then, but I mean, I love, you know, fakey models don't really put me off too much because, you know, you got Jerry Anderson and like all that stuff and I love model work. I love anything that features model work that's obviously model work, and clearly this was done before there was CGI and everything.
Oh, yeah.
So, but anyway, I think there was just a tone, and it took me a few minutes. Admittedly, I'll have to say it took me about probably 10 minutes or so to kind of catch the rhythm of what they were trying to do. But once I sort of settled into the groove and realized like kind of what their goal was with the movie,
right,
it really started to click for me. And I really enjoyed it too. It was very, very silly.
Oh God, totally silly. It reminded me of Mom and Dad Save the World a little bit.
It reminded me, to me, it was like if, there was, for some vague reason, I kept thinking about Married with Children. I don't know. It was maybe because it was so stage bound and obviously.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like even the exteriors were so clearly just like a not very big studio.
Oh no, it was totally that. I mean, it was just like a piece of AstroTurf and a hedge to hide the corner of the studio.
Right, right. And but like once I kind of got into the rhythm of what they were trying to do, as far as like the tone of the whole thing, I really enjoyed it. And particularly, I'm looking at the IMDb page now. I would not have known the man's name, but I knew his face. Burt Remsen as the grandpa.
Yes.
Was great.
He's awesome.
He's always been one of those guys. I love character actors that just pop up in these things and you say, oh, that guy.
That guy.
He was really good. Garrett Graham and Mary Warnoff are just sort of a given. They're both great.
And, well, that whole thing, I mean, we should say briefly, I mean, they don't say it right at the beginning. It's got a sort of Leave It to Beaver vibe at the beginning where you think, oh, this is some, you know, white bread, middle-of-the-road American family here, but it turns out they're these total swingers, and they're going out to pick up another couple to bring back to have a wild party night with, and, you know, Garrett Graham's got the polyester shirt unbuttoned down to his navel and the big
gold medallion.
Yeah, and it is just so cheesy and so funny and played so broadly. It just totally won me over.
Voila, chez Potterman.
Otherwise known as the leisure zone.
Oh, wow, you really got a sensuous type place here.
So regal, so magnificent, and so isolated from the city.
That's what we love about it.
Yeah, it's kind of a nature trip. Puts you in touch with the real you.
The cities are so nasty these days, don't you think?
Absolutely. The cesspools of civilization. We much prefer to live on the yacht.
Yeah. Say, babe, you know, I think I better check on Norton, see how he's doing with that satellite dish. Excuse me.
A character that when you gave me the file, I sort of flipped through, and there was like one scene that I had flipped to and stopped and watched like about 30 seconds or so, and it was a scene with the daughter of the family played by Diane Franklin and her boyfriend, who is John Grise or Grease as OD.
Yes.
And I thought, oh God, it just seemed so bad when I was just sort of flipping through.
Yeah.
But he was funny, and he completely won me over his performance, and I just thought I really laughed a lot at his character.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And he was, it was, I really enjoyed it. Even the effects by John Buchler, who is somebody that's been, you know, he's prolific as hell.
Yes.
But he's never been known for, like, necessarily top-quality effects, and I think the same thing could be said here. These are not, you know, this is not Gremlins level or The Fly level effects, but it works, I think, for the tone of the whole thing.
Exactly. Well, some of the stuff is good. That alien that is trying to, you know, recapture the monster looks really nice. You know,
it looks nice, but there was something about the way his presentation and the very pantomime hand gestures.
Yes.
I couldn't help but think of Plan 9 a little bit when I was watching, like, him on screen, pleading with the humans, people of Earth.
People of Earth, you must heed my warning. Destroy your satellite receivers. Dismantle communication systems. Render your television sets inoperable for the next 200 Earth years. It may already be too late.
I don't know. Jeez, it looks kind of like that Japanese thing. You know, whatchamacallit. You know, where the Martians steal all the Earth women and knock them up. You know, to repopulate Mars.
Oh, that sounds kinky. Is that hardcore?
Fantastic idea for a movie. Martians diddling the women of the universe.
Yeah. You get it, Spiro. Intergalactic swingers.
That might have been intentional. You know, that cheese.
Oh, I absolutely think it's intentional. I don't think there is a smidgen of fromage anywhere in this production that was not completely intentional. I think this was intended to be a big pile of cheese from the get-go, and it avoided a trap that I think that's difficult to avoid. Frequently, I mean, people set out to make a cult movie, and I'm not saying that that's what they were doing here. I don't necessarily think that they were saying, oh, let's go make a cult movie. I think they said, you know, we've got a script here, and this is the context. This is what happens within the framework of the script. And I really think it's probably worth, to some extent, avoiding spoilers. But anyway, they say this is what happens within the context of the script, and they said, we're not going to be able to make this and make it like a serious thing.
Right.
And so they let the comedy elements kind of come to the top, and they were able to pull it off. Horror comedy is difficult, man. I mean.
Oh, absolutely. There's not many that get it right.
And this was the era of that. The mid-80s, you know, that became the era of, I mean, I can think of so many examples of miserable horror comedies. Dead Heat with Treat William Episcopo, to me, is just like, and that was like a huge budget thing.
Yes, it was.
And it was just God awful. And then there's Return of the Living Dead.
That's brilliant.
This is no Return of the Living Dead. I don't want to give anybody any false hope or illusions about that. But it was it was enjoyable, very effective. You know, I was rolling with it. The couple they bring home were,
oh my God, Spyro and
Cherry.
Yes. And that girl, she was in The Man with Two Brains.
Yes, and she's also in an awesome James Woods movie called Cop.
Okay.
And
but in the Man with Two Brains, she does that voice that she does in this movie, and maybe that's her real voice, because that's two movies where she's done it, where it's like, wow, look how hot she is, and oh my God, get her out of the room because of that voice. So it's really
I don't really remember in Cop her voice. I remember her body.
Well, maybe she didn't talk in Cop, or they might have dubbed her. You know, they had the guy that did Mel Gibson in Mad Max.
That may have been who dubbed her in Cop. I'm not sure.
That's what I mean. Yeah, I bet that's what it
was. The same guy. That's not the goose.
That's not my bra.
but I remember a James Woods. Well, I don't want to spoil that, because maybe we'll do that on a later show, because that's a really good movie. That would be a good one for the podcast, I think, because it would be out of the ordinary for what we do. Maybe we should think about that. Do Maniac Cop and Cop.
Man, that's a lot of cops.
That's a lot more cops than I'm used to. But
the setup for the movie is that you've got Garrett Graham and Mary Warnov. They're a swinging couple with two kids, a young son and a teenage daughter. And the teenage daughter looks exactly like Christy Lauper. And
Cindy.
Cindy Lauper. What did I say?
Christy.
Okay, yeah, that would be wrong. And they are the Mary Warnoff and Garrett Graham. They are the, what's their character?
Puttermans.
And they are swingers, and they the dad is a complete gadget hound. So he has like every single piece of electronic paraphernalia that a person could have, including this super state-of-the-art do-it-yourself DIY kit satellite dish that he's going to use to pick up all sorts of information, including adult films and, you know, movies and sports and all this stuff. And he's got this really funky remote control with a rotating satellite dish on it, and he's gonna, you know, he's got his whole house wired up and a hot tub and all that. But something goes amiss, and a monster from another world that is being beamed from its world to like some other distant world to get rid of it gets trapped and beamed down through his satellite dish and comes out into their house. That's the setup.
Yes, and he's picked up by the satellite feed and manifests physically in the confines of the Putterman home and sort of fucks up the Saturday night festivities.
In a big way.
For all concerned.
Oh, Stanley was just showing us the wonders of satellite TV. He's a real video pirate. Eh?
Really love your house here. It's so, I don't know, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, thank you. We did it ourselves.
Hey, babe, is everything cool with Sherm?
He's in with Dad, doing terrific.
You know, you really got a cute kid there. Have you ever thought about putting him in the movies? I mean, I know a really sweet agent.
Oh, God, no. Sherman's much too neurotic to be an actor.
Yeah, the only thing the kid is interested in is being a soldier.
Oh, such a manly pursuit, raping and pillaging, creating life and taking it away like the gods of the ancient Greeks.
Oh, hey, guy. I mean, I'm a lover, not a fighter. Comprende?
The creature himself is just a mishmash of anatomical features that, but again, I mean, it's, I think it works within the,
it works within the
tone of the movie and,
yeah.
And it's, you know, the thing, the ironic thing about it is so much fun and it's slime. There's tons of slime and tons of brightly colored fluids, but it's not particularly gory. And, I was thinking as I watched it, if it hadn't have been for all the kind of innuendo and sort of not so innuendo overt sexuality
right.
That was in it, that it would be something great to show my kids. I mean, I would love, I mean, there's parts of it, particularly the fact that like one of the sort of the hero, quote unquote hero of the piece, or the person that really kind of steps in and decides something has to be done, is the son, Sherman, who is probably 11 or 12.
Yeah, at the most, yeah.
And the kid's really good. And Chad Allen is somebody that he's a face and a name that I recognize as having gone on to do television stuff. Not things that I've watched, but things that I know were reasonably successful. So the guy's had a career.
Oh, yeah, I looked him up.
Yeah, I did not go so far as to look him up, but I know he was on a series at some point, but the guy's had a career. So, and I mean, and he's a pretty good little actor in this, at this stage in his career. Again, the grandfather was great. The Spiro character, Alejandro Rey was
awesome.
Killing me.
Yes.
Was killing me. Yeah.
All of that stuff was brilliant. That whole thing. I wish that had been the whole movie. I mean, it made me think of, Eating Raoul, you know, cause similar kind of setup.
Well, it could have been the Mary Warnoff factor there, too. It would have been great to see, what's his name?
Paul Bartel.
Paul Bartel just sort of cruise through as like a cop or something. And
yes.
That would have been great.
I think that's the reason this movie works. If they had just hired half-assed actors to be in this movie, this might have been stupid. But, they had a really talented cast. And apparently, you know, Ted Nicolau, who directed it, also wrote it. And, I mean, he just really had a, had it all nailed down. I think it was one of those things where they just had the right people doing the right stuff. And,
right. Even
and had just
the,
enough.
The Medusa character, who was obviously Elvira,
yeah,
was funny.
Yeah, all good.
I front to back, I had a good time watching it.
So thank you to Stuart for that.
The Stew Man. And shout out to Stew Man, and send us more recommendations. And anybody else listening, send us recommendations. It was cool to have something recommended to us that we watched and actually enjoyed. Particularly something that I had like I think as you said, pretty low expectations for.
Very.
Because I at the point when this came out in '86, I was watching just about every horror movie that hit VHS. So I watched a lot of Charles Band produced stuff. And in my recollection, the one or two things I remember coming out of the Empire Pictures canon that were really worth seeing were The Reanimator, which I think is obviously a classic,
right?
In my estimation. And I remember, strangely enough, I remember really liking, and I don't know how it would be on revisiting, Rennie Harlan's first American picture was called Prison.
Okay.
And it was a really well done for minimal amount of money haunted prison movie. And I remember that being pretty damn good. And that was a Charles Band Empire Pictures. But, you know, the thing is, I can't complain about Empire Pictures because, like, I would watch so many bad movies that were produced under that banner.
Right.
And I would go back and rent the next one the next week.
Well, I mean, it was what was out there.
Whatever was out new.
Right.
And I was watching what was available.
And if people are not familiar with the output of Empire, you can go on Wikipedia and they actually have a list of all their films under Empire. It's Empire International Pictures.
And I did not know that.
Just go ahead and brace yourself because there's a lot of crap in there.
There is. There's more crap in that list than the average suburban septic tank. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're right about that. But that was good. I mean, TerrorVision completely exceeded my expectations on every level.
Mine as well. And again, shout out to Stew Man for the recommendation. We really enjoyed it.
So let's move on to Shock 'Em Dead from 1991, and I guess we could talk a little bit about our history with this film.
It's okay. Go ahead. You lead off.
Well, we had watched it, years ago, and one of the reasons I was curious to watch it is one of the stars, and I guess maybe the star is none other than Steven the Fight Doctor Quadros. And one of the things we've always enjoyed doing is watching, like, the Ultimate Fighting, mixed martial arts stuff. And there used to be an operation that was in Japan called Pride Fighting Championships. And it would feature Steven Quadros and Boss Rutten, a well-known fighter. And they were the broadcast team. Eventually, Steven Quadros was replaced by a guy named Mauro Ranello. But, Quadros made his impression on us in that area, but then we found out later that he had been in a movie as an actor, and I guess that would have to be in some sort of air quotes.
I was about to say boogly on that.
Boogly. And we managed to track down a copy of Shock 'Em Dead, and we watched it.
Shit for brains. I mean, what do you think? Everybody in this trailer park is deaf, or you just out of your fucking mind?
Hey, I got rights as a tenant.
Oh, please, stop it, will you? You're breaking my friggin' heart. Rights, eh? How's this for a right? I want you out of here. Now, tonight. I can let you in here without a deposit. You're 6 months behind on rent, and now you drive me and everyone else crazy with that damn guitar playing of yours.
Someday I'm going to be so famous that people are going to stand in line to hear me play.
Famous, huh? You even dream you're famous, you better wake up and slap yourself. And with your amount of talent, the only line you're going to see is at the unemployment office. Now, if you're not packed and out of here by midnight, you and all your crap is going to wind up in the street. You hear me, creep?
And, you know, I'm going to say that watching it the first time, I really enjoyed it. And I laughed a lot and totally dismissed it. But watching it the second time, it was not the same movie as I remembered. And I actually enjoyed it, I think, a little more on a actual enjoyment level instead of just enjoying it because I was laughing at it.
Well, that's interesting. I think that I sort of had an opposite but equal, let's say, in Newtonian terms, an opposite but equal reaction to it. I remember enjoying the hell out of it, watching it in a more of a the environment of a festivity.
Yes.
And I think probably a somewhat altered state of consciousness that and watching it again this time, man, it was almost like I was struggling.
Yeah.
I mean, there, I was struggling. It was, I mean, there's ample, eye candy on display.
You're talking about Stephen Quatro's hair, aren't you?
Well, now that too. But I mean, there's
a lot of topless women.
There is a lot of TNA, that's for sure. But like, man, it is, I don't know, dude. I didn't remember a lot about it. I remember the one infamous line that I guess we're invariably going to quote during this review.
I'm sure we've already played it by now.
We need to play a clip of the, insert clip here.
I felt something the moment I met you.
Angel, stop it. I shouldn't be here.
You belong here and you know it. You may think you're involved with someone else, but nobody's going to love you as hard as I can.
That line right there that you just heard, had that became a catchphrase for many a moon.
Yes, that was a meme around the office.
It was. We repeated that line amongst Marty and myself and one other fellow employee, Steve, so many times. In any context where it was applicable, nobody.
And some where it wasn't, yeah.
Yeah, nobody can do anything as hard as, you know, fill in blank here. Nobody can do fill in blank as hard as fill in blank.
Yeah, it's like a Mad Libs thing, yeah.
Exactly.
Nobody can blank as hard as I can blank.
Fill in verb, fill in noun.
So that should have been on the match game with, Gene Rayburn.
Nobody can whizzle my bippy as hard as whatever.
In the butt.
Like, man, I tell you,
it's bad.
It's awful.
But it's good.
No, it's not.
I enjoyed it so much. I enjoyed it.
The voodoo woman. The voodoo.
Oh my God! Yes.
Now, tell me, what do you want more than anything else in this world?
I want to be the greatest rock star in the world, and everything that comes with it.
What's the character's name from Manos, The Hand of Fate?
Oh, Torgo?
Torgo?
Yeah.
Should be able to sue for her picking up like his wacky leg motion.
I didn't even think of that, but you're dead on. That is exactly perfect.
That's the first thing that popped into my head was like, oh my God, it's Mano's Hand of Fate because she's shuffling along there, casting her voodoo mojo out.
But she had a badass house with like a jungle in it.
Well, speaking of which,
yeah,
I don't know. I was trying to be respectful about spoilers with Terrorvision
because no,
I
not on this one.
Enjoyed yeah, it, this. But like when he wakes up after yes. his transformation into the ultimate rock star,
like split level.
Yeah, this palatial estate.
That he weighs 1,400 square feet, man. It was nice.
It was 1,400 square feet of 1976 era wood paneling with, I don't know.
Yeah, it was not even like Brady Bunch cool.
No. Oh my God. Mike Brady could have
architected the hell out of it.
Yeah, he would have designed something far superior to this.
Hi. I'm here for the audition.
Oh, this ought to be good.
Well, guys, I think we finally found him. This guy, Martin, come here, Martin. This guy has got to be the worst guitar player in the world. Tell us, Martin, how'd you get to be so bad? How many hours of non-practice did it take?
Come on, Johnny.
I have made better sounds sitting on the pot!
Johnny, don't you think you're a little hard on the guy?
Look! I'm tired of these non-professionals.
Please don't, you know, I don't want to sound homophobic because I'm really not. I didn't know until I saw the fictional band in this movie that there could be a lead singer that seemed more effete and effeminate than Mike Reno from Loverboy. But yeah, this guy that is the singer for the band, Johnny.
Yes.
Is like, I expected at any second he was just going to burst completely into flames.
He is so funny, dude. That's one of the reasons why I thought it was awesome, was just these completely over the top characters. And he was probably the most over the top.
I've never seen anybody rock a unitard.
All that stuff, all their clothes, the whole band, yeah. His was the worst, but all of them were terrible. And they were supposed to be the greatest rock and roll band. And then here comes Angel Martin, this devil possessed, you know, guitarist who looks like Axl Rose in those, you know, first Guns N' Roses.
He looked like Nikki Sixx.
Awful.
It's shocking to me that this was made in 91. This should have been, I mean, you know, if this had been made in 81.
Yeah.
You might have could have cut it some slack. I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, it's hard. It's really hard for me to. I mean, there may be some people out there that I don't like that I would recommend this to.
Oh.
But, whew.
Ooh, no, I think I have a lot of people that are around me in my little, smallish circle that I could show this to as a awesome example of a wonderfully bad movie. Like, this is like Battlefield Earth level of bad.
I think my issue with this movie is, to me, this is the quintessential get together with friends and watch it over some beers movie.
Yes.
I needed a sounding board while watching this. I needed like a relief. It's like a pressure cooker building up like too much pressure. I needed something.
You need somebody there riffing on it.
Please, God, I needed somebody to go, are you seeing this?
Were you laughing yourself while you were watching it?
You know, I really, like, not in a good way, laugh. Yeah. I wasn't really even laughing. I was just like, I don't
really?
Know. Yeah.
I was laughing a lot at it, especially at that voodoo woman and at the songs. Let's just play right here one of the songs from
please,
the band.
Please, if you're going to play a clip of a song,
yeah.
Play a clip of the song about the virgin girl.
Yes, that's the one I want to play. So, right here, listen to this and try to contain your rocking.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How you all doing tonight? I can't hear you. Come on. That's better. Will you please join me in a warm welcome for Spastic Colin?
So that was Johnny singing this rock and roll song. And again, if this was a video podcast, you would be seeing my fingers just doing air quotes like a fiend when I use the word rocking and singing.
Right, and if it was a video podcast, you would also be able to see the fact that in the unitard there was no scrotum.
No, what was there was probably a gym sock. Because beyond that, it was like Ken
it
doll.
Was a, down there. It was a baby sock. It was a like a footy with a fuzz ball on the end of it.
Yes, it was not a baby's arm holding an orange.
No.
So after that little bit of performance, Angel Martin, the Stephen Quadros devil-possessed, we haven't really explained that, guitarist, he kind of trips Johnny.
You don't have to.
Oh, we need to. He trips Johnny and gets him out of the area, and then he takes over singing. And then
he gives him Das Boot.
Das Poopa.
And then kicks him off the stage, and then he rocks it as hard as Stephen Quadros can.
So let's listen to Stephen Quadros, quote-unquote, because I'm sure it wasn't him singing. Let's listen to Angel Martin's rendition of Virgin Girl. Here it is. Because that was just as stupid as the other. But it was better.
It was better. And it was much less, like, overtly homosexual.
But this, I'm going to tell you, Mike, we don't have to include this in here. I was on the IMDb page, the user review that's up there.
Yeah.
This guy says he's seen it about 50 times. He loves it. And he's like, you know, he says, I love this movie. I rent it every so often and show it to people for the first time. They always roll their eyes when I tell them the title of the movie, but in the end they get a good laugh and actually appreciate it. And that's the way I feel. I mean, this is bad.
I think it's bad. That's one of those bad movies that you need to watch with a group. Really.
And with people who appreciate a bad movie.
Right. I mean, I really I have fond memories of it when we watched it, the three of us.
Right.
But I have, like, no fond memories, even in the least, of watching it recently, like in the last day.
I'm super ready to watch it again.
If I was watching it with other people, yeah. I would be down with it. But,
yeah.
Man, I don't know, dude. Maybe it was a frame of mind thing, but it was just like,
That is too funny. I was really glad I didn't watch with KMO, though.
I think I actually hurt my back watching it. It was like work. I think I strained a vertebrae getting through this.
Tote that barge, lift that bale, watch that movie.
I'm going to require chiropractic care in the wake of this movie.
You do know that Flickers from the Cave does not have any kind of workers' comp, right?
I'm shooting for Aflac.
Oh, okay. Well, that you may need that, actually, after this.
Why the fuck do we come here?
Can I help you? Can I help you?
I want to order a fucking pizza!
What's your problem, man? The last time I was here, I only got 16 slices. I was supposed to get 18. I always get 18. I expect consistency!
I'm sorry, sir. It won't happen again.
You're lying to me! I'm just gonna have to make the goddamn pizza myself!
But this movie we thought would be a perfect match with TerrorVision because we looked at the trailer for TerrorVision on YouTube, and it was it reminded us of Shock 'Em Dead.
It did, and like you know, and like when I watched TerrorVision, and I watched it alone.
Yeah,
it had that sense of joyously bad fun. That I remember from Shock 'Em Dead, even though I think TerrorVision is like really smartly written and
yes.
knowingly bad. I think Ted Nicolau just kind of knew what he was trying to accomplish, and I think that I'm not sure what rocket surgeon helmed this movie. I'll have to go back and look here. Mark Freed, I don't think he knew shit from Shinola personally, but, I don't know. This was just like an exercise in joyless, bad acting and Tracy Lords has like all this, I mean, screen presence of like, I don't know, somebody who should be making pornos, I guess.
I'm not going to at all argue with you about the quality of the movie, but my experience with it was pretty good. I did enjoy it. I do want to tell you one thing though. I just out of pure curiosity and self-abuse, I went and looked up Mark Freed, writer and director of Shock 'Em Dead. He has one other film to his credit. It's called Lovers and Liars. And hold on just 1 minute before you continue. I need to tell you who's in this movie. Michael York.
Nah.
Michael York, David Carradine, and David Faustino, Bud, from Married with Children.
That's a remarkably eclectic cast.
It also has a guy that is almost the worst name that could be in a movie. There's a character in the movie named Manny, and it is played by Michael Bayes.
Oh.
Almost, but it's
he's one letter from being a total fuck.
He is one S away from being an a-hole.
Hi. Is Tony here?
Yeah, but I don't think you should try to see him now.
Well, look who came back.
I was wondering if we could talk.
Oh, yeah? What happened to fuck you, Tony, huh?
Look, I'm sorry. I want to get my job back.
You want a job? I got a job for you. The toilet's clogged. Why don't you take this straw and suck it dry? Get out of here.
So, yeah, so I think this is awesome. I love when we can do a show like this with some movies that I'm sure no one has heard of and that maybe no one will want to watch. Because, if Shock 'Em Dead, if you love a shitty movie, this is the one. This might be the best out there. It is a turd of extraordinary magnitude. And this,
you may want to, I mean, if you can't pour Riddex in the back of your DVD player to help break down fecal matter, like you put in a septic tank, I'm going to say, take care before you watch this movie.
Yeah, you might want to put some towels down.
If you can find it on DVD.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to find this legitimately. I think this is going to have to be something you're going to have to prowl some dark areas of the internet to locate.
There's nothing legitimate about this. This is a dumpster baby of cinema.
This thing, you're saying no one wanted it and they left it to die.
Yes, this is a prom night dumpster baby, in the words of Family Guy.
But I, you know what? I'm going to watch it again, and I'm going to show it to people I care about.
I'm going to question whether you really care about them. I don't know. Show them Terrorvision. Show them something that's at least enjoyable.
Well, see, but I that's the thing. I think, like you said, with the right group of people, that you would have a hell of a good time with
I really needed some tequila for Shock and Bet, I think.
Maybe a little electricity, and then perhaps you could have been shocked into enjoying it. Maybe that.
Maybe so. Maybe like some, jumper cables on my genitals or something would have taken some of the pain out of watching that. It's rare that we disagree. I think this is probably healthy. I think for the most part, we have been on the same page about most of the things we've reviewed on the podcast. This is a rare occurrence of divergent opinions. So this is probably healthy.
It's so funny though. I mean, we're both agreeing that it sucks. It's a turd of a movie, but I'm going, yeah, it sucks. Watch it. And you're going, it sucks. Don't.
Yeah. You know, I mean, some people clothespins on their nipples. I don't know, man. I mean, if you're that
kind of... Not if there's anything wrong with it.
Not if there's anything wrong with it. And if that's what blows your apron up, then go for it. Clamp up and watch Steven Quadros. It's worth watching, I will say. It is worth watching for... It's funny because I just watched Strange... And this is a strange, reach to kind of make a connection, but I just watched last night an episode of the Andy Griffith Show.
Yeah.
And it was one of the ones that featured James Best.
Okay.
As a character who is like the best guitarist in Mayberry.
Right.
And like they show him playing furiously, but they they'll show insert shots of somebody actually playing the guitar.
Right.
And then long shots of James Best doing the most nonsensical autistic hand movements you can imagine on the fret on the neck of the guitar.
Right.
And that's the thing that was Steven Quadros in this movie. They just show him they show these close ups of the fretboard and these fingers flying across the fretboard and doing all these hammer-ons and pull-offs and just this pentatonic madness that he's creating on the guitar, and then but you never see his face,
right?
And then they show these insert shots of his face looking like he's passing a kidney stone, where he's just or like the biggest turd you've ever tried to get out of your body.
It is completely awesome. That was one of the things that made me laugh the hardest. There's one in particular, maybe one of the first times they do that cutaway to his face.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, I was dying.
Yeah, it looks like he's pushing a watermelon out of his ass. I mean, it's – it may be a G.G. Allen thing. They may have had him on set inserting a banana, even though poor G.G. was dead by 91, I think.
But they were keeping his spirit alive, man.
Maybe. Was he dead by 91?
I don't know.
He may have not been quite dead.
Not quite dead. He's getting better.
Gigi was never getting better. Gigi was born and started going downhill.
He died in 93, so he was still alive.
Okay. He would have been a welcome addition to the cast.
He would have brought too much reality to this thing, man. This was the biggest pile of phony crap I've ever seen.
Yeah, and there was nothing phony about Gigi. He was hardcore.
How about the awesome on-set little blue plastic swimming pool they were keeping the Coca-Colas cold in?
Yes.
Come on, dude. That was awesome. And that snake. That shit reminded me of Extra with the leopard. It was like, hey, somebody's got a snake.
Right. Yep. Yeah. there was a, you know, this is probably, this has probably have been a better match with Extra than with Terrorvision.
Okay, to, we'll watch it again and cover it one more time.
No. Okay. That's your mission, should you choose to accept it. That's a solo mission.
So you're vetoing
that's, that. I'm just saying that's one of those things. It's like you cannot send a battalion in there. That's like a Navy SEALs operation. One man goes in, one man comes out. That's like some Snake Plissken shit I cannot be involved in. You're going to have to take the gull wing and like fly in there and land on top of like a tall building or something. Can't land on the World Trade Center, unfortunately.
No, not anymore. Man, you brought me down. I was like feeling good.
Then you Well, you know, I wasn't trying to bring up 9/11. I was trying to bring up Escape from New York, which is a high.
Which is better than 9/11, I'll admit.
That's a high for me.
Yes.
So if you want to watch the most spectacularly poorly executed insert shots of anybody playing a guitar since the early 60s and the Andy Griffith Show, or you want to see somebody rocking a headband and a unitard harder than Mike Reno.
Nobody can rock a unitard harder than Johnny.
No.
And nobody better put Johnny in a corner either. Cause...
Oh, Jennifer Grey could take this guy.
Oh, God.
She could kick his ass like a soccer ball. I mean, there's no question about it. Pre or post, you know, rhinoplasty, she could take him.
Oh, yeah. I don't think, I think Gary Coleman could have climbed all over that dude. There wasn't much there.
Richard Simmons would have been like going, oh, my God.
He would have been, dude, butch up a little bit. Come on.
Right, right. Just go ahead and tuck it in there Buffalo Bill style and go all the way.
So last night we watched this movie from John Cameron Mitchell called Short Bus.
Yes.
And Short Bus features graphic, explicit, actual intercourse on camera. And there's a lot of women on women intercourse, a surprising and in some ways shocking level of male on male graphic sexual intercourse. And, a good bit of straight male on female and female on male intercourse. And I do believe that Johnny was still gayer than any of that.
I'm not surprised. I've not looked at the guy. Let's see. Johnny was played by Marcus Grupa. I haven't looked at his filmography, but if I did, if I clicked that one, I'm one link away from clicking it. And if it said he was in like, Popping the Brown Eye number 12 or something, like right after this, it would just not surprise me at all.
You should go ahead and click on it, and then you would see that he only did one film.
That surprises me less than the fact that he might have turned out in doing, like, some not-so-manly porn.
Well, let's say this. He did one film under the pseudonym Marcus Grupa.
Oh.
He may have gone on to do other things that are not listed here. How about that? That way you can have both your cake and eat it too.
As Johnny Brown Eye, I don't know what.
No, as like big Marcus Steel Pants or something.
Right. Johnny Gaping Rectum. He was Native American.
What is that? Goatsy. Johnny Goatsy.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
You did not know that dude was the whole, he was the truth behind the whole Goatsy gotcha web page thing.
No, I did not. I think he might have been John Teeter.
The time traveler?
Yeah, he traveled back in time. I don't know.
He traveled back in time to suck in that movie.
He traveled back in time to try to prevent the production of this movie because he saw it and said, God, I look gay in that movie.
He looks gayer than Billy Squire.
Well, you know, he really does. I mean, and that's shocking.
That's saying something. I entered into the Short Bus film knowing full well, having seen it before. That is how open-minded I am about this type of material. And yet still, I find myself giving him shit about it.
About Johnny?
About Johnny, yeah. I just got that dude. I can't just leave it alone and say, you know what? More power to him. It's just awful.
You know, it.
I don't think it's awful if it was depicted as a pop singer or someone. Like, you know, I mean, you've got, like, openly gay metal singers. The dude what they call the Screaming for Vengeance. What are those dudes
Halford,
called?
From Judas yeah. Priest. Rob Halford. Halford.
Openly gay dude.
Openly homosexual, but he's not, like...
But he's not him. Johnny.
He's not wincing and mincing and prancing and...
And not that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, we can look at Eddie, Freddie Mercury. You know, there's a guy who was, you know, maybe a little bit on the gay side, and you know, he rocks out. But
yeah.
But it was rockin' music. It wasn't.
It was good. He was good. And this, yeah, which I mean, this guy was not a good actor, and he was not a good singer, and
he was not good looking.
He was not in a good film.
Yeah, he did not.
And it was not directed by a good director, and it was not written by a good writer, and he was not surrounded by fellow good actors.
They did have Tracy Lords, though.
Yeah, well, yeah, her stage presence. Yeah.
And Troy Donahue, don't forget.
Yeah, that's shocking to me, watching, because I would have never recognized him.
No, I wouldn't have either.
As Troy Donahue, or Aldo Ray.
Or Aldo Wright. This yeah. just had to be, though, dudes that owed a favor to somebody or something. But, you know,
I think they owed their bookie.
If you go back and look at especially Troy Donahue, that dude was in all sorts of just crap.
Well, he was in crap, but he was also kind of a guy that would take a chance. I mean, he was Polyester?
Yeah, Polyester with Smell-O-Vision.
Yeah, so I mean, like, he's a guy.
No, that was Tab Hunter.
Tab Hunter, that's right. That's right. I'm getting my former screen idols confused.
But Troy Donahue has been in a lot of crap.
Boy, no crap is it. Nobody can crap harder than Jonathan Freed.
I'm wanting to watch it again. I'll be honest. I'm getting the itch, man.
I think they make an ointment for that. I don't know. I don't know what to say.
I got the cure, and it's called Stephen Quadros. That's the cure for this itch.
As he was. It's just, I mean, you know what it put me, I thought, you know what I thought about?
What?
One of the things that really occurred to me was the Nutty Professor.
Yes, absolutely.
Because you're supposed to sort of identify with the guy that, like, he is really, they make an effort to make him a sympathetic character.
Right.
I think initially. And, you know, he's just getting crapped on at every turn, even by Unitard Johnny.
Yes.
And,
None of it made sense, though. He wasn't a good guitarist, so it wasn't like he had this dream and he was going to do it, but he just didn't have the look, you know?
Right, right. He sucked,
and he was kind of an asshole. And like when he, you know, he's such a prick to those girls who were nice to him. Like when he comes back to the pizza place later and he's all Angel Martin superstar, he's a prick to them and like threatening them, like actually going to kill them or stab them and pushing them in spaghetti sauce and stuff.
Right, just... drowning them in fuck you, Tony pizza sauce.
Yeah, but just like, you know, I could maybe understand if he went after the boss.
Right.
Not those other girls who were like, there was a couple of them who he kind of liked and stuff. Why not try to pick them up? You know, like Tracy Lords should have been the girl in the pizza parlor, and he goes back and tries to win her over with his new persona.
Well, he was perving through the pepperoni hole there.
No, then now right there, you've coined a term. You guys are the thing that's going to mean something from here on out, man. I'll tell you what, I was at home, I caught myself perving through the pepperoni hole, if you know what I'm saying.
That's right. Unleashing the Kraken.
Yes.
But, that was the thing that always, that's the thing that, like, The Nutty Professor was one of those movies I loved as a kid, and then when I watched it as an adult, I was just like, why did I like this? I like him so much better as the goofball.
Yes.
And he's such an asshole, after he becomes, air quotes, the cool guy.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing here. I mean, which
right.
The only thing he, I guess you can chalk it up to here is like the satanic overtones, undertones, monotones. I don't know. It's just, I apologize for my lack of enthusiasm about this, but.
No, you are totally entitled. And I, you know, it's like one of those things. I can't defend it, but I can say that I enjoyed it a lot.
I'm glad you did. I've enjoyed talking about it. The conversation we've had has been like immensely more enjoyable than the actual endurance of the film. I'm ready to watch Salo again before I watch this again.
Well, we'll try to come up with a palate cleanser for the next one.
Please.
So, listeners, please. Let us know what else you know about that we don't know about that we might enjoy or might not enjoy but would have a great time talking about it.
That is not directed by Jonathan Freed. It is not starring Stephen Quadros.
Maybe we should watch his other film and just complete his filmography.
You know, maybe not.
I think that's a good idea.
I think if you can complete somebody's filmography by watching two movies...
Yeah.
It may not warrant the effort.
I don't know, man. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say a thing here that might shock you a little bit.
Okay, shock me.
All right, Terrence Malick has only made a few movies. You know? So I think you can really compare Mark Freed and Terrence Malick in that way.
Oh, I think not. I think that you can compare. I think you could go on and like, compare like the Coker brothers or the people that John Waters digs on. How many movies they've made? Like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of movies. And you know, then you look at a prolific filmmaker like, say, Robert Wise. Who has like this massive, you know, filmography
right.
that are all Oscar worthy and like, and many are Oscar winners. And then there's the Passion of the Penisoids or whatever the name of the, the Coker Brother movies is. So I think that it's not comparable. I think numbers do not equate filmographies. There's no mathematical equation where Jonathan Freed and Terrence Malick equal anything.
I'm going to get a shirt that says Freed equals Malick, and I'm going to wear that proudly.
Will you do it? Maybe. That's.
No one will even know what I'm talking about. That's what will be the most fun of it at all.
I'm not sure what you're talking about right now.
I know, it's confusing.
I'm not sure what I'm talking about right now. From the time we started talking about this movie, I'm not sure what I'm talking about.
It all just became kind of blurry.
It did. I think I've blacked out for about half of this podcast. It's going to be interesting to listen to because it's going to be like the experience of watching this the second time. It was like a new movie.
Yeah.
Listening to this episode of Flickers from the Cave is going to be like a new conversation for me because I'm a little lightheaded, slightly disoriented.
I don't know. It's kind of like the Jerry Seinfeld description of a car accident. You know, it's just like, yeah, there was a lot of noise and light. At one point I was facing the wrong way and then all of a sudden everything stopped.
That was exactly what watching this movie is like. There was a lot of noise. There was a lot of light. A couple of times I was facing the wrong way.
Because you didn't want to let any more of it in your head.
Because I, you know, fortunately do not have eyes in the back of my head. And then, like, it was just over. And I felt emotionally spent.
Wow. Man. Did you get the name of did you recognize the person who did this to you?
I was trying to get Stephen Quatro's tag number and insurance information, but...
But he was too busy running away harder than anybody you've ever seen before.
He sped away harder on a friggin', what is that thing?
Vespa?
A Vespa, or no, the stand-up thing, the Segway.
A Segway, yeah.
He segwayed from me quick harder than anybody could.
Well, the other dude would have sort of skipped away. Johnny would have skipped away.
Minced and pranced.
So, So this episode 17 has come to a close.
Oh, thankfully.
So, Mike, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I'm going to snuff the torches with a unitard. and try to reinvigorate myself.
And now, I tell you what, let's climb up out of this cave harder than anyone has ever done it before.
Harder than anybody can.
All right, so everybody listening, thanks for listening. Stay in touch. Let us know what to watch. And until next time, this has been Flickers from the Cave.
Comic books next door.
Comic books? That's for fads. Keep the change.